Welcome to the THA-TDH Weekly COVID-19 call. My name is Richard, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'll now turn the call over to Chris Clark. Chris, you may begin.
Thank you, Operator. Welcome, everyone, to our weekly call with the Tennessee Department of Health. This is Chris Clark, Senior Vice President for Clinical Services at THA. We appreciate your time this morning, and as always, we appreciate Dr. Mary Margaret Phil and Dr. Amelia Keaton from the Tennessee Department of Health for joining us. At this time, I'll turn it over to, I believe, Dr. Phil.
Hi, thanks, Chris. Yes, good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. We don't have too many updates to share today, but I did just want to update you on a few relevant points. First, a couple of updates to our website that I've talked about for the last couple of weeks have now at least been partially implemented, and the one update which everyone might find the most relevant is that we now have aggregate data sets available on our website that are updated daily, and that includes the daily case information, information broken down by county, the breakdowns of cases by age, race, ethnicity, and sex, and then there is, of course, a full data dictionary. So for your staff and teams that might have interest in monitoring trends in your particular smaller local areas by county or surrounding counties a little bit more discreetly, you now have access to that data to do so, and hopefully you find it helpful. I also wanted to just provide a little clarification, as there was some back and forth on some reporting metrics earlier this week. At the state level, we are classifying some cases as probable, and that is a determination based on a national case definition that has been established by CSTE and CDC. We actually are being a bit more restrictive in Tennessee than some are at the national level, but basically this is a status reserved for individuals who are being monitored by public health and who develop clinically consistent symptoms with COVID-19. So, for example, you know, a household contact of a confirmed case or another close contact of a confirmed case that then becomes ill and for whatever reason are either not tested or who have a either a negative PCR test or a positive or negative serology test, recognizing that there are some instances where false negatives occur with molecular testing. And we think we certainly identified some scenarios where those we've had cases where people had very classic symptoms, had known close exposures to confirmed cases, and we want to be able to capture those somewhere. So that number is being reported separately now at the bottom of the sort of data update PDF that's posted every day. Earlier in the week, it was included in the total numbers, and then the decision was made to just report it out separately. So I just wanted to clarify any confusion about back and forth on that, and let you know that, you know, we are assessing those people. We, of course, recommend that they get testing when they're identified, but as we all know, that does not 100% mean that they would ultimately become a lab-confirmed case. So just in case there's any confusion about that, I just wanted to be clear. And then I'll turn it over to Dr. Keaton because I think she might have some other relevant updates on a couple of more HAI-specific topics.
Hi, everyone. This is Amelia Keaton. Not a whole lot to update this week. I think one important document maybe that I will direct everybody to is that CDC released some new language regarding removal of transmission-based precautions for people with COVID-19. It can be found on CDC's website and has some pretty good explanation as to why they've changed the duration of contact precautions and also the thought process behind it. Essentially, I think what they are recommending now is kind of similar to what we're recommending in terms of isolation at home or isolation or return to work for healthcare workers, that people should be on transmission-based precautions for a minimum of 10 days after symptom onset. I think that's pretty, I think most people who have COVID-19 are often on transmission-based precautions longer than that based on their symptomatology, but I think that is a good rule of thumb to follow. Another thing that CDC has revised a few documents to update is the move away from recommending a test-based strategy for removal from transmission-based precautions and also removal of the preference for testing for return to work for healthcare providers, recognizing that people who are infected with COVID-19 may continue to have detectable viral RNA in respiratory specimens for weeks after their symptoms. And so the current recommendations, and I think this is more in line with what we have had a preference for at the Department of Health, is to use the symptoms and a person's time of recovery to help guide some of those decisions instead of PCR testing. And so now CDC's guidance is just more in line with that. I think there are some facilities who are still using a test-based strategy. That is certainly their option. But, again, we don't know the significance of people who have detectable viral RNA on those tests, especially if they're no longer having symptoms. Another document that came out this week that I know has created a lot of buzz is CMS's release of a more stringent or more defined timeline for NHSN reporting for long-term care facilities. You know, I think at this point we are still trying to work with facilities to encourage enrollment in NHSN, which requires enrollment in SAMS, which is CDC's authentication software. That process can take some time, and then also just learning the system can take time. And so we are trying to figure out the best way to help support facilities to both do the enrollment and also to do data entry into that system, recognizing also that at this point most acute care facilities are not required to report into NHSN, but they are required and encouraged to report into the Health Resource Tracking System, which is a separate Tennessee Department of Health system. I do think that, you know, once we get over some of the hiccups and speed bumps of reporting into NHSN, that data can be incredibly valuable both to us at the Tennessee Department of Health and also at the federal level in terms of distributing resources and identifying where there are pockets of COVID-19 or where there are significant shortages of PPE. That's not something that we've had a great way to systematically capture before. And so once we are on board with that, it can really provide some very valuable information both to us and then also allow us to better help you in long-term care facilities. We're hopeful that Dr. Pam Talley, who is leading our nursing home enhanced testing initiative, will be able to join, but I think that will likely not be until around 10:30. We know there's been a lot of questions regarding that and also the push to provide testing for all residents and all staff members of long-term care facilities, including skilled nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, and homes for the aged in Tennessee. We can also try to answer some of those questions on our end, but I know she has really been instrumental in getting that off the ground and probably is better able to answer some of those questions than Dr. Phil or myself. I think with that said, unless you have anything further you need to add, Dr. Phil, we can turn it back over to CHA for questions.
Mary Margaret, anything to add?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Operator, I believe at this time you can open the line for questions, please.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star, then one, on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. There will be a delay before the first question is announced, and if you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, for any questions on the line, that's star, then one, on your touch-tone phone. And our first question on line comes from Penny Riggs. Please go ahead. If your line's muted, please unmute. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset. Okay, it looks like we lost her. Please stand by for further questions. Okay, we have a question online from Jim Vandersee. Please go ahead.
Hey, this is Dr. Brown. I'm here with Jim. Two questions. First, are there any state plans or state guidance around any statewide or county-specific seroprevalence studies that you guys are looking at for antibody testing? I did see the CDC released their, or at least said they have a test. They haven't released a test on Wednesday that they have approved, and I know they're looking at some commercial tests, as are we. I just didn't know if the state had any plans to coordinate antibody testing or seroprevalence testing with the CDC test across the state? Then I have a second question after that.
Sure. Hey, Dr. Brown. Yeah, I don't know the exact status of the CDC test and what the plan is in terms of its dissemination to state public health labs or anything of that nature. I think as of last night when I looked, there are now 12 or 13 serology tests that have emergency use authorization from FDA, and we have the capacity to utilize one of those, the CellX test, at our state public health laboratory. There have been preliminary discussions about potentially doing some seroprevalence assessments in certain populations, such as the healthcare workforce at certain institutions or others. I'm not currently aware of any imminent plans to do, you know, a statewide seroprevalence survey, although we are certainly starting to see an uptick in these tests being utilized by various clinicians out there in practice. I will also say we're planning to put out a HON this week, probably today's Friday, so probably today, this afternoon, once we sort of finalize the language, that will officially make all serology results reportable, both positive and negative, as we sort of look to quantify this burden and understand those results. So I'm not sure if that exactly answers your question, but hopefully provides a little bit of information.
And I'll also add that I think CDC is still trying to do some testing on their own to figure out the best use of a seroprevalence and serologic testing, just by testing large numbers of people and seeing, you know, how many of them have had diagnosed COVID-19, how many of them haven't, and then also, you know, using some of that information to better figure out the sensitivity and specificity of those assays.
Yeah, we're kind of walking slowly with the different vendors and haven't really made a choice yet, although we've had some internal discussions, and I just talked to Dr. Buchanan this morning to kind of see what their plan is, and the local health department doesn't really have a plan to do a seroprevalence study. I just wanted to coordinate if the state was going to do anything with the CDC before we got out ahead of anybody, so thank you for that information.
Sure.
The second question I had was, and it may be for Dr. Campale, if she can answer it. If you can, I'll wait until she gets on. But the question I have is about ordering physician for the tests. That has been a point of question for the three SNFs that we have within Covenant. Who should the ordering physician be so that the results go where the governor wants them to go, I guess, is the question. We can do it any number of ways, with the medical director, with Dr. Piercy, with Dr. Campale, with local, but the local folks don't seem to have any direction either. So if not now, I'd love some direction to come out in writing from the state that says, here's who the ordering physician should be for that mass testing. Thanks.
Yeah, I think in general we prefer for it to be the medical director at the facility. You know, first and foremost, these results are also meant to be helpful for the team there at the facility caring for patients. You know, we assume that those line level results will be reported to us through sort of normal reportable disease mechanisms. And then we do ask for some sort of aggregate metrics, basically just the number of staff tested, the number of residents tested, the number positive in either of those groups, and then ideally the number of positives that had symptoms, and we don't need to know anything specific about their symptoms, just whether or not they were symptomatic or not. So that's really the one sort of formal report out that we would ask if all of the results are ordered by and sent right back to your facility, is just to make sure that we have those aggregate metrics for us to track by facility and then, you know, by region and across the whole state. And we'll certainly make sure that those are readily available to you, but we often find that the logistics of ensuring that the right people have their results is often easier if the medical director at the facility is the ordering provider.
All right. The other question that has come up with the nursing home piece is around consent and waiver, and because there was some comment in the governor's comments about, you know, staff or patients would have the ability to opt out. We're obviously hoping that no one does and don't plan on anybody, but that infers some sort of waiver or additional consent. The state hasn't provided any of that. So is there any guidance on that, or are we doing that internally as well?
Yeah, so I think from our perspective, I don't believe there are plans to have any sort of official additional form or anything signed. You know, we have reiterated that, you know, the testing is voluntary. We're not you know, going to hold a patient down and force them to be tested if they or if their, you know, healthcare proxy have concerns or don't want them to be tested. You know, that that potentially changes a little bit, you know, if we're responding to an outbreak where there's a more urgent need to know the status of every single staff or resident in the facility. But in these sort of, you know, preemptive outreach testing efforts, you know, if one or two folks decline to be tested, that's fine. So I think in discussions that I've been sort of peripherally involved with, I believe we would just ask that, you know, sort of the whatever normal consent procedure happens for any medical testing that's being done on your residents happen. But but from our perspective, there's no, you know, special form that needs to be signed or anything like that.
Thank you.
And thank you. Once again, for any questions, that's star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Standing by.
While we're waiting for a question, this is Chris Clark at THA. Any updates on our previous discussion around guidance for discharge from hospitals to nursing homes? And I know the state was waiting for feedback from THCA before they made a decision around posting or altering that document. But can you give us an update on the status of that?
Yeah, this is Amelia Keaton. I can say that there have been discussions at higher levels about that. I unfortunately am not aware of the exact status at this point. I will say that I know that the stance from senior leadership here has really been to allow you know, the facilities and also the acute care hospitals to try to work out some of those details, but I apologize, I don't have a more detailed answer at this point.
Thank you.
And again, for any questions on the line, that's star then one on your touch-tone phone. And it looks like we have no questions in queue at this time.
Great. Thank you, operator. I'm assuming that Dr. Talley is still tied up on another call and has not been able to join. And so I'm debating and would like some feedback on whether we should just go ahead and close out the call and then ask Dr. Talley to join us on the next call or send out any and share through THA communication channels any updates or documents that she would like for us to post or share. What are your thoughts about that, Dr. Keaton and Dr. Phil?
Yeah, I think we can certainly ask her to join next week. I mean, we did ask her if she had any big updates or information to share, and I don't think that she does, except to just kind of urge patience for everyone with the process. We know there's a lot of we appreciate all of the interest and communication. We've developed a survey that's been disseminated to many or most of the long-term care facilities and have hundreds of responses of facilities, you know, being ready to do testing. I think from our perspective, the kind of, I don't want to say rate-limiting step, but the steps that require thoughtful consideration and a little bit of planning are that if a facility wants is going to do testing and they need to utilize either our state public health lab and or specimen collection materials from them, or if they need PPE for the specimen collection, then, you know, we're trying to just ensure, you know, a little bit of a thoughtful approach to that to be sure that we don't overcommit any of those resources, you know, while we're trying to keep a close eye on supply and stockpiles and things of that nature. However, if there are facilities that have a relationship with a laboratory that does the testing that do not need our support for specimen collection materials or PPE or staffing assistance, depending on their setup, then from our perspective, they can go ahead and test, and we will, I believe there's a contract relationship in place between the state and every nursing home, at least right now, statewide, whereby we can just reimburse the nursing home for the cost of testing. And then we would just ask that those at least aggregate, well, obviously we would want any positives and negatives to be reported to us at, you know, for normal reportable disease mechanisms. But then we would also just ask that those aggregate numbers be provided. And we will, in the weekly update, make sure to send that out to you, Chris, for dissemination to the members so that people know exactly which metrics we're looking for.
Great. Thank you very much. Operator, one last check if there's any questions in the queue.
And again, as a final reminder, that's star then one. And it looks like we have no questions.
Okay, great. Thank you for your assistance. So with that, I think we'll close out today's call and give you back some time on your Friday. And again, we appreciate Dr. Keaton and Dr. Phil joining us, and we hope you have a great day. Thank you.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.